want to go to North Galway because I think all of us are feeling a little bit down today because of the tragedy that unfolded, which came to our attention yesterday. Huge sadness in the North Galway area following the tragic death of a secondary school student who fell from a tractor last week. 16-year-old Adam Higgins was a fifth-year student in St. Charlotte's College in Tuam, and Adam fell from a tractor in the Cylon area last Wednesday evening. The 30th of August, around 7:40 p.m., he was taken to Beaumont Hospital in Dublin, where he received treatment for serious injuries. And the Gardaí indeed said yesterday evening that he had passed away in the early hours of the morning. I want to go to the principal of St. Charles College in Tuam. John Kelly joins you on the line. John, good morning to you.
Good morning, Keith. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for joining us. A very sad story.
Yeah, it's very difficult for the school. And as you said, like we've known for this week, it's a week now that he had been involved in an accident, and we knew that the news was bad at the time. But we were hoping and praying from all week that we'd hear good news. But yesterday, the news broke that he had passed away.
Again, it's a most beautiful story. I mean, his mom indeed and himself had a very beautiful relationship. He had a lovely relationship with both sets of grandparents and his father, a young man. She's a young mom as well. She's involved in sport. It's just one of those tragedies of tragedies.
It is, yeah. Adam was one of those guys that in the school that you would have known from when he came in the first year. It all struck me from when he came in, his level of maturity. It was just, he stood out from many of the other students. He was one of the first students in every morning in school for unlocking the school. He was there waiting to come in and ready to bring the milk down to the staff room or whatever had to be done. And then that carried throughout the year. He got involved in many things, which was the college opera, all those events, open nights that were going on. Adam was always there. So he was very much a key, integral part in the school and just really got involved in everything.
And again, I know you gathered the friends and classmates in the oratory yesterday.
Yes.
That must have been very difficult to do.
Yeah, it was a very, there were two year groups there that were brought together, both the transition years and fifth years. He would have, his closest friends would be in those year groups, although he would have friends throughout the school. But it was a very difficult time, very difficult to bring them together. But, many of the students stayed on for the whole class and the place was silent. So, there was a lot of upset among them. And again, today we're there, a number of the students are with them, with the counsellor and with our chaplain is available as well. So there's a lot of sadness among his friends here, yeah.
There is, and for his mom and for his family and his grandparents on both sides, as I said, we have to remember everybody today on this one.
Yes.
And then indeed his mom's friends in Cylon and the various clubs that she was involved in. It's the community of Cylon is strong, but it needs to be strong for them right now.
Oh, absolutely. They need all the support that's there. And I spoke to Mom yesterday briefly. It was really, really, really difficult week for them and a terrible tragedy. And the school will be there and we'll try and support the family as much as we can. The funeral arrangements are set for this over this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. So the school will be out to support them in any way possible.
And what a fine young man. I mean, I saw the photographs online last night just before I went to bed, and what a fine young man with such a wonderful future ahead of him.
Absolutely, moving into his leaving cert, he hadn't been back at school this year. He would have been starting in fifth year and, setting on the path to set himself up for whatever course he wanted to do after leaving St. Charles. So it's a terrible tragedy, a great future ahead of him. It's just so sad that he won't be able to realise that now.
Isn't it just, a simple accident, but the repercussions indeed forevermore are there, but these things happen, these accidents happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, and we've had a lot of sad news on the radio and TV since Leaving Cert students that did their Leaving Cert, Leaving Cert in June, and the number of them that are not with us today. So we do remind our students here in the school that, they have to watch out for each other and watch out for themselves when they're out. And you give them the best advice you can, but accidents happen and it's tragic.
It is. I spoke to many people this morning, indeed, many, many people that I would know in the various areas, and the family is held in very high regard. The relationship between his mom and himself and his dad and himself and his grandparents, indeed, he was very close to his grandparents, but they're just held in very high regard. So I think the support will be there for them. But my words, yeah, is not going to ease the pain that his mom has gone through right now at this very minute. But our thoughts are with them.
Yeah, absolutely. And we can see that. We put a notice out from the school, and the amount of support that came in for the family, you can see that it's broad and across the board. So there'll be a huge amount of support there, but they will need it. It'll be a very difficult time ahead for the family.
Yeah. One person put it to me, and it's so poignant. She said they were like brother and sister, mom and son. They're just like brother and sister.
They were, and you could see that. When mom would come into the school for any of the events that were on, if it was a parent-teacher meeting, they had a very close relationship there. So, and mom would have been very much involved in Adam's education here in the school. So, yeah, you could see that relationship was there right through since he came in here as a first-year student. You could see it.
Well, may he rest in peace, and may they get the peace of mind that they need moving forward as well. John, thanks indeed for joining us today on the programme.
Thank you very much.
Strong on a very difficult day for the principal of St. Charles College there, John Kelly, joining us. And I thank him for joining us and everybody else that we spoke to this morning, indeed, about the tragedy that saw Adam Higgins leaving this world. Quick commercial break. We're back. We're staying with education because St. Raphael's have a rally cry today. Stay tuned for that and more to come. A very good morning to you. Comment lines on 086 38 33 55 3. My next guest indeed is Julie Burke, and she's Vice Secretary of the Parents Association for St. Raphael's College in Loughrea. She started off by saying to me, I'm 107 years old. Did I pick you up wrong or right?
No, that's not what I meant at all.
Does it feel like that today now?
I feel 107 years old today, racing it in that traffic. I don't miss it, that's for sure, Keith.
Listen to me, St. Raphael's College in Loughrea is 107 years old, and you're on a mission, so you are, and you're looking to identify past pupils.
We are indeed. We estimate we have around 7,000 former pupils worldwide in over 50 countries, and we would just love to reconnect them with each other and for our own purpose, our own selfish reasons. We have lots of photographs in the school, and it kind of dawned on us we actually couldn't identify everybody of the former alumni. Hence this project was born, and we would just love to get as many photographs as we can that we don't currently already have.
And do you like a challenge in life?
Oh, God loves a trier, Keith, and I love a challenge, definitely.
But I mean, so out of the 7,000 that you have, how many would you be looking for? Would there be...
I would be positive that I would like to think that we could get 60 to 80% of them. That would be my mission.
How many have you in hand now, roughly?
Well, in hand, we would have probably up to about 1,000 people that currently engage and are active with the school that are former alumni.
So you're just looking for the other 6,000?
That's it.
It's really
a small number. Yeah. It's reasonable.
And they can, well, I mean, to be honest, we have listeners all over the world, but they can be anywhere in the world.
Yeah, look, people are very nostalgic. I think when it comes to being Irish as well, it's very important for us to connect, and we just want to reconnect with those people. And I just feel as well very strongly about that. We have to know our history. We have to know who we are and where we came from. And we're already doing that with the current students by encouraging them to join as well. So that when they do leave, they can connect with other alumni in Australia. Hey, I'm going to Australia. They can reconnect with somebody that's already been to the school.
I don't think current students, I better turn that off or I'll freeze you to death altogether. I don't think that they really get the whole alumni situation, that they need, that you need to buy into it. You don't have to be online every day talking about it or otherwise. But I came across a situation recently where we were in Notre Dame, and I spoke to somebody then later on in the week who went for a job, a very high-powered job. And basically because they were an alumni of Notre Dame, they got the job. And it's those connections. So if you went to Raphael's and you wanted to go working for IFAC, where you work for anybody like that, the alumni carries an awful lot of weight.
It absolutely does. And, at the end of the day, when we go for interviews, even for jobs, that's what people are looking for. We see your qualifications, but at the end of the day, people are looking to connect. What can I identify in you that I see in myself?
Yeah.
And that's often why we ask about hobbies and things like that. Is there something there that I can have a common ground on with you? And do you match the ethos? So when you have this alumni, and we have former students, current students and past students all connecting together, it's, hey, I'm in LA, I'll show you around, I'll give you the shortcuts and make your life a little bit easier. Or maybe, hey, I'm looking for somebody, is anybody willing to help me find somebody to fill this role?
Yeah.
you know. So
that's what it works. So yeah. Have you plans for an event then, or have you a cutoff point for this?
We don't have a cutoff point because this could take a long time to get this.
Yeah.
Project finalised, and for me it won't be finished until we locate every single photo hiding in attics and boxes and garages all across the world. I guarantee you there are people right now saying, do you know what, I think I have actually a sports photo that we took way, way back, and I'm going to dig it out and send it on. And that's what we want. We want to unearth those little gems that people have, and it's going to be a wonderful trip down memory lane for so many people. So that's where the mission is.
So we're talking then to past pupils, we're talking to parents of past pupils, grandparents of past pupils.
Absolutely.
Obviously in Rayfield, so they might say, well, hang on, he's now living in Hong Kong, but there's a box under the bed upstairs that we could find out what's in it.
Yes. And make sure you ask permission first, of course, before you go through people's belongings.
Have a good rummage, go on.
Have a good dig out. But yeah, and we just really want to help people renew those old friendships and even start new ones with people that they perhaps went to school with but didn't know very well. And now that they're grown up and, you know, maybe they have more common ground now than they did when they were in school together. Mm-hmm. That's very important.
It's a good idea, so it is.
Yeah.
How can they get the details to you? Because you're the campaign manager.
Oh, that's a very nostalgic title to put
vice
on me now.
Secretary of the Parents Association. I read further down, you're campaign manager. Sure.
Look, I'm doing my best to give back to this school that has given so much to my two children. I'm actually not from Loughrea originally. My husband went to the school, and I can tell you honestly, I've lived in many, many places across Galway. I wouldn't live anywhere else. I think Loughrea is an absolutely stunningly vibrant town, and I just want to give back to a school that has given so much to us as a family and as a community, and that's why I got involved. People can get in contact with us on the Facebook page, so it's St. Rayfield's Loughrea Alumni. We also have on the St. Rayfield's website page, each year there, you can connect with us on the email address as well that's on the website. So you can reach out and connect with us that way. But by all means, if you're any way not technically inclined, please get in contact with the school and they'll put you in contact with me and I can help you to get onto the Facebook page that way.
All right. If they want to get further details, so just go to St. Rayfield's Facebook page.
That's right.
Get further details from there then.
Yes.
And you can help them out from there.
More than happy to.
Will you come back and let us know when you've got them all together and what you plan to do with them then? You
absolutely.
Know, all the photographs and, yeah, and take it from there. There's a lot of history in St. Rayfield, so there is.
There is so much history. And there are so many schools across Galway that really have such a handle on their history. So I want to help do the same for Rayfield's because it is obviously a very historical building. There's a lot of stories there that have still not to be told. So we want to share all of that with the current students as well.
All right. Julie Bourke, thank you indeed for joining us. Vice Secretary of the Parents Association for St. Rayfield's and campaign manager in this regard. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks,
Keith. And a very good morning to you. Now, though, let me go to Dave O'Connell, who joins me from the Connacht Tribune. Dave, morning to you.
Morning to you, Keith. How are you? If anyone actually wants to see what the class from St. Rayfield's from 1980 or 81 or 96, 97, we just used the two of them because no more than yourselves, we have the story in this week. So if you're in it, you may not have changed a whole lot. It's only 40 something years ago.
Do you recognise any of the people in it?
Well, the St. Rayfield's people didn't come into the St. Mary's discos, so not really. But I'm sure it'd be lovely to get the photograph done for now from the class of 1980, 1981, I'd imagine.
Okay, but we've just given that job to Julie at this stage. She said she'll have it for you for next. She'll have next Tuesday for you. She'll have them all together, a photograph taken, and she'll have it for next week's paper. Listen to me, your lead story, though, is about a school as well and how school numbers have fallen in Roundstone. Probably on the back of the holiday homes that have really mushroomed there.
Yeah, I mean it's a very serious story. Back in 1983, there was 116 students in the National School in Roundstone. This year, there are 21. So that's one fact. The other is that over 60% of the houses in the Roundstone area are now either holiday homes or part-time homes, and prices have skyrocketed for any house that comes onto the market there. And when you not unreasonably equate the two of these trends, you find the problem. either locals can't afford to live there or most of those homeowners are weekenders and they're probably well past the primary school time of life. Now, Roundstone isn't the only holiday hotspot to suffer like this. And to be fair, I have to say the numbers for the school didn't just plummet in recent years. It's been a downward trend for many years. But it is a very dramatic example of what happens when your little village becomes a tourist hotspot.
Absolutely. Now, there's a crackdown on those satellite dodgy boxes. And
I love the fact that the Garda response to this is that if there is a crackdown, it won't be the guards knocking on your door on this, because as they say, they have far better things to be getting on with. And I think that's fair enough. But there is an organization called FACT, the Federation Against Copyright Theft, and they work on behalf of organizations including Sky, and they're working to say with Sky, and they say law enforcement, although as I've said, law enforcement doesn't appear to include the Gardaí, so I'm not sure who that is, but they say that they will disrupt and shut down organised and sophisticated piracy networks, and they say they'll take legal proceedings against individuals selling devices such as Fire Sticks that have everything from Sky Sports to GAA Go and all for very, very little. Now, I have to say, I paid the full Sky costs, but anytime I'm in discussion with people, I think I must be the only one that's doing that. So equally, if this were to work, there could be a lot of blank screens this winter.
Could be. Camille, you have a lovely tribute to Mick Molloy, the Olympian from your native Folk the Rart, who passed away last week.
Yeah, I mean, I knew Mick all my life, and I have just such a memory of seeing him pounding the roads around the village. And he was one of two Olympians to come from our parish, along with Cumann Clancy, who threw the discus for Ireland back at the Games in 1948. But Mick ran in the marathon in Mexico in 1968. He finished 13th in that. And he went on to break the world record for 30 miles 6 years later before he hung up his spikes. He was such a lovely, modest man. And I had the privilege, and we talked about it on the programme at the time, but the privilege of meeting him again last year when he donated all of his medals and all of his trophies to go on permanent display in the community centre in Uachtaráin. Mm. It is a magnificent hall, and you can walk inside the door and see this. There's 15 All-Ireland gold medals for a start. There's 5 Galway sports stars. There's his Hall of Fame Galway sports star, and so much more in there. So Mick is gone. He was buried this week, but his memory and his medals will most certainly live on.
And may he rest in peace. There's also a long piece with the Galway actress Nora Jane Noon, indeed, and she's the star of the second series of RTÉ's drama Hidden Assets, and she's delighted to be back in Galway.
She is thrilled to be back in Galway. Now, people may remember her from the Magdalen sisters from some years back. She was just 16 years old at the time and at school in the Mersey, and others will know her from Jack Taylor, where she played a Garda in that detective drama based on Ken Bruin's books. For the new series, she's been promoted, I suppose you could say. She's a detective sergeant, this time with the Criminal Assets Bureau in Hidden Assets. But as you say, she's back living in Galway City after many years in London and in Los Angeles, and she's talking about what it's like to be back home in Galway and loving it, and loving walking the prom with her little girl. Herself, her husband and little girl are back in Galway, and talking about so much more. So all over 2 pages in today's paper.
Absolutely. Now, it's a big weekend for a number of clubs in the Senior Football Championship.
It sure is, and I can be parochial again for a second, the meeting of Uachtaráin and Killannon will be of huge interest in that part of the world. Both of them desperate for a win if they're to progress, but I'd also have to say there'll be equal interest elsewhere in the clash between Barna and Saltill Knocknacara, and all of the rest, all of the games previewed, also full coverage of last weekend's club hurling fixtures, which sorted out the qualifiers for the knockout stages there. A rare defeat for Galway United away to their bogey team Longford, and a lovely piece as well on show jumper Michael Duffy, who helped Ireland to a silver medal at the European Championships.
Now, I have the connectivity here. It's absolutely chock-a-block. So what else have you got within it?
Loads in there. The St. Raphael's piece that we mentioned already, that's covered as well. Sharon Shannon reflecting on her life in music. She has a massive new box set coming out of all of her recordings over the last 30 years. So if you're a Sharon Shannon fan, it costs a few bob, but that's one for you. Also, I suppose, on music, tentative plans for a major music festival at the old Galway Airport site. And still on music, a good piece on Dunmore singer-songwriter Raelta. She launches her new album, and as you say, loads more in there as well, Keith.
All right, Dave. Listen, thanks for joining us today. We'll talk to you next week. And thanks for joining us on the programme. Dave O'Connell joining us there with the Connacht Tribune. Out since early morning, by the way, and loads more within it. Loads of picks, too, by the way, of various events across the county. If you want to pick it up, you can just go to the Connacht Tribune website, go to your local news agents, filling station, otherwise pick it up and enjoy it today. Keith Morning, I own a chain of creches and I will be joining the strike as well. I missed the meeting last night because I never heard about it. Completely unfair system and not a level playing field. Some creches charging 70 or 80 a week more than others. It has to be the same for everyone. Can you send me on the details of the lady being interviewed and a link to the interview, please? I just want to talk to her, the caller said. Now, just ahead, by the way, of the nitrates directive and the issue yesterday. Yesterday, I caught up indeed with the MEP, Colin Markey, MEP, yesterday evening. I spoke to him from his office in Brussels. But we spoke to him yesterday, just before the issue had raised its head on nitrates for yesterday. And this is what he had to say prior to that.
Good morning, Keith.
Thanks for joining us today. This is a big step forward, isn't it?
This would be a great step forward. I think all the time we're looking at a scenario where, I suppose, to enhance farmers' income, and I suppose we've relied on CAP for many, many years to support farm incomes. And in reality, farmers do many things that, if you like, support the environment, and this is a way to get rewarded for that. Firstly, I suppose you're looking at a situation where they get recognised for the carbon they sequester on their land. And alongside that, there's also the potential for what they call enhanced carbon credits with co-benefits. So where farmers will get paid for other things to do on their farm as well as sequestering carbon. So really, it's really about creating a framework whereby you identify where farmers currently are at, if you like, the current level of carbon on the land, the current, if you like, let's say a profile in terms of the hedgerows or different things like that. Establish a baseline based on that. Then create a system of what's called MRV, or monitoring, reporting and verification, that measures the increases in let's say, carbon, or increases in the actions they've taken, and then duly rewards people for those actions.
I might get you closer to the microphone there. Can I just ask you, in relation to how is this going, and I hate using the word being policed, but how is this going to be monitored, policed, and to ensure that everybody is online?
Well, basically, the scenario would be where, if you like, private operators would propose a methodology to the Commission where they would run a system that farmers could engage with, that would, if you like, quantify the carbon and then quantify the changes over a number of years, and farmers would get paid on the basis of that. So it's really down to, like, there'll be a number of companies, even in the West of Ireland, there's a number of companies who are looking at systems where you could, let's say, use LIDAR or soil tests or different things to establish the profile of carbon under the ground and over the ground. And then the actions from there forward that would, if you like, change that those levels of carbon, that they could record the value of that. So rather than working, let's say, with the Department of Agriculture or working, you'd actually be working with your own private contractor, if you like, to achieve this. And then they would be up to them to provide all the, if you like, the monitoring, reporting, verification, do all the paperwork and provide all the data to the Commission. And what you would then have is you have a system whereby there's a value put on that carbon, and then there's a quantity put on that carbon, and then you're free to trade that, hopefully.
So you're free to trade that carbon. You just went away from the microphone. You're free to trade that carbon, you said then.
Yes, the idea would be that from there, then there would be a framework. The framework is to create the value in the carbon and to certify the valuation of the carbon, and then that then would be available to be traded. I suppose the question is who you can trade that to, and what we've looked for in the Agriculture Committee is that would be tradable, I suppose, in two scenarios. One would be to, if you like, green the food processing sector. So, like that, it could be traded within the agri-food production sector to offset the carbon emissions, let's say, from the processing sector. But secondly, it could also, we want to see that it can also be traded to, let's say, other private sector companies in other areas, like, let's say, in aviation or in some of the big, we'll say, cement producers, and they would have a significant carbon footprint that they need to offset, and they can't, if you like, they won't have a solution for it anytime soon. So they could buy carbon credits from farmers to offset their carbon responsibilities. This system will allow that carbon be verified to allow them to do that.
And is it going to be the same system right across Europe? And if so, how much is this going to cost, do you reckon?
The EU is proposing that, that conversation remains to be fully thrashed out, but the suggestion would be that the establishment of a baseline is something that the Commission may be interested in funding towards the cost of. And then I suppose it's down to the individual companies to provide the MRV, as they call it. But ultimately, I think what you're really looking at is the value of the carbon. Like, a ton of carbon currently is trading at anywhere between 80 and 100 euros a ton, and that's set to rise significantly. So if you look at what you're talking about, in mineral soils, you're probably not looking at that significant of amount. But where you're looking at peatlands and the carbon, abating the emissions of carbon from peatlands, this could amount to very significant money. And I think that's an area. Like, I think we've had a big debate about nature restoration and rewetting of peatlands. I think I always believed that was the wrong approach. But I think through carbon farming, you could find a system that puts the farmer at the centre of the equation and the centre of the debate, where he's, if you like, it's a farmer-owned agenda. And through that, like, they say if you raise the water table by 10 centimetres, for instance, 4 inches, you lock in 5 tonne of carbon per year. That's what's estimated to be. So if you calculate 5 tonne of carbon at 5/8 is 400 euros, 5/8 is 400 euros. So that amounts to, like, that's only by raising the water table by 4 inches.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of things that this could do in a positive way, where farmers couldn't choose to make their own decision and they'd be farmer-led. The problem I really had with nature restoration was forcing people down a path. This gives people the option and the opportunity.
And can I ask you, when is this going to come into being then? Because a lot of things are approved and passed in Europe, but then it takes maybe a year or 2 years to come down the road because of the emergency that we're in when it comes to climate change. Can this be introduced and put together very quickly so that it can benefit the climate change that we need to do in the short term?
Well, ultimately, it's gone through the Agriculture Committee so far. It will have to go to the Environment Committee as well, and then plenary and trilogue. So it has a road to go yet. It will be, like, you'd hope to have it through all of that by the end of this term, which is June of next year now. That might be ambitious enough. But thereafter, you'd like to feel it would roll out within maybe 18 months or 2 years from that. So I'd say the like of 2026 is probably a realistic ambition to think it could happen by then.
MEP Colin Markey, thank you for joining us today on the programme, and a very good morning to you.
Thank you.
And that interview was recorded yesterday evening indeed with MEP Markey, just prior to that whole directives brouhaha that has blown up, and we'll try to get to that as well later in the day. Don't forget, by the way, tomorrow morning it's Community Matters to do with Menlo. We're coming to you live from the Menlo Park Hotel tomorrow morning. We'll be there from 9 to 12 and we have a cracking amount of guests. We'll tell you about that later on, joining us on the programme tomorrow. Going to be good fun. So if you want to join us for that, feel free to do so. And this caller said, Keith, I'm wondering if you could help me and do a shout out. I'm looking for 2 Christy Moore tickets for Saturday the 9th in Leisureland. If you know anybody selling them, can you give them my number, please? And other calls coming in too. But all the creches, I have to say, today, all of them are coming in. I got a lovely email this morning as well from the wonderful Jim Hines. Good morning, Keith. I'm holding a walk in Portumna this Sunday morning, the 10th of September at 11 a.m. It's in conjunction with the Memory Walk for Galway Hospice Foundation. Could you give it a big mention if you don't mind? And again, just a reminder that in Portumna, the Galway Hospice Memorial Walk in conjunction with Galway Hospice Memorial Walk is taking place on Sunday the 10th of September. So join us at the entrance to the Forest Park on Abbey Street at 11 a.m. The walk will be 5 kilometres approximately. For further details, you can give Jim a ring on 087 64 11 711. So that's 087 64 11 711. All donations will go to Galway Hospice Foundation. And Jim is a Trojan volunteer, I have to say, in Galway Hospice Foundation. If you want to get further details on the other walks, you can call them on 091-770-868. That's 091-770-868 for further details from there. Quick commercial break and we're back just after these. Comment lines are all open. It's a Thursday morning. We're with you until midday. A very good morning to you. A couple of quick things. Keith, prayers were offered this morning in Tuam Cathedral for Adam Higgins from Carla Strand, who lost his life in that tragic tractor accident at the weekend. Father Stephen Farrher also asked for prayers for his parents, grandparents, family and friends, especially his school colleagues in fifth year in St. Charlotte's College in Tuam, County Galway. Well, delighted with that as well. Thank you indeed for that text today. And morning, Keith. This colleague, Tom Gilmore, was at Mass there this morning. He just sent that in to us. Keith, I fully agree too with the creche owners to take the decision that they're taking from there. And Keith, how much does it cost to have a child in a creche per week? I don't know those fees, to be honest. And why would anyone expect a person to mind their child for money? They personally and would not get out of bed for it. All care workers in the private sector are the poorest paid, either working in creches or caring for the elderly. Are the poorest paid. It just goes to show how little this important work is valued by other people as well. Let me go though to Dunica Foley, who joins me from the Galway Volunteer Centre. Dunica, morning to you. How are you today? Thanks for joining us today.
Nice and warm.
Yeah, it's nice and warm. It is nice and warm. Nice and cool in here, I hope.
Lovely.
Listen, you're now looking for nominations for the 2023 Volunteer Ireland Awards. Take me through this. So is it anybody that volunteers in a voluntary capacity?
Essentially, yes. It's a national awards ceremony that happens every year, and we're looking for nominations from anybody in the community, so anybody can nominate anybody else, I suppose. That's the best way to put it. And I suppose we see it as in the volunteer centre, as our Sam Maguire, Liam McCarthy. We want Galway to be winning. We've had a lot of winners over the years, and we want to keep it continuing as well. So there's different categories that people can nominate on. If they go to volunteer.ie, you'll see there's just a big image at the front of the website. You can click on it and nominate somebody that you know in the community who, I suppose the expression goes above and beyond. Everybody, I think, knows somebody that either is doing a lot of volunteering, and when they're not volunteering, they're thinking about their community, thinking about ways to improve their community, whether that's coaching a local kids team or helping out with Tidy Towns, or you know, teaching kids
music or
subjects, or helping
people. It has to be in a voluntary capacity, of course.
Exactly. Like the, I suppose, example in my own life, we have my kid is in a GAA team, football team, and the coaches in the football team, like, they're in constant communication with the parents. They're arranging matches, they're arranging training, so they're doing all that. But I suppose also when the kids are playing, the kids are learning new skills, they're making friends, they're, you know, developing their confidence. And that's all purely done by volunteers. Nobody's getting paid for it.
And can I ask you then, is it a city and county or city-based volunteer?
City and county.
So anybody that has someone that maybe looks after the local, you know, the green in front of the church end or otherwise, or they can be nominated. Anybody can be nominated.
Exactly. And obviously, I mean, it's volunteering and it's not necessarily about the winning, but it's a great way to thank you. If you nominate somebody, they know that they have been nominated. There's a process there where there's an adjudication panel. They look at all the nominations, they come up with a shortlist, and then there's a big award ceremony in December. I think it's on in Limerick this year.
Oh, wow. So
it's an opportunity to go somewhere for the night as well, and meet other people who are from around the country who are doing similar volunteering to yourself. And it's an appreciation.
It's a lovely way to do it for those that volunteer. And I think everybody that you talk to is a volunteer of some sort, volunteer to help somebody or to drive somebody or to bring somebody. I came across a lovely story yesterday of somebody who brings somebody in to the hospital every week and pays for it themselves. They're not even a neighbour. They got a nod that somebody has to go in every week to get treatment in the hospital, had no way in. This person, who's not retired or otherwise, decided to take a half day every week out of their annual and drive the person into the hospital, then buy them a cup of tea and bring them home again. I think those type of people should be recognised.
Yeah, and I think it's also a recognition that without that type of volunteering, without that, you know, people helping because they want to help, a lot of the world around us would grind to a halt fairly quickly, and, you know, people don't look for thanks, but it's a nice thing to get.
Yeah. It is. So if they go to volunteer.ie for further details, then that would be the best location. and fill in from there. What's the timeline on this now?
Yeah, it's the deadline is the 8th of October, so there's a few weeks left yet. So it's an opportunity to have. I'd encourage anybody to, you know, if you walk around your town, your village, you will see the impact of volunteering immediately, and you'll probably know somebody who was behind that piece of work that was doing, or that service that's been operated.
And then is it narrowed down to a county by county area, or how does it work then?
It's there's different categories. So there's categories like arts, culture, festival, children and youth, environmental, animal care, sports and recreation, and there's about 11 categories altogether. So, you know, you can fit the type of volunteering into a particular category. So they come out with three people in each category, and then that goes forward to the national ceremony as well.
Wow, but this is a national event.
It's a big deal. Well, we think it's a big deal.
It's a big deal for somebody to get that far.
Yeah, previously we've had Deborah and Arthur Carr from Claddagh, who won the national award. It was during COVID anyway. I remember meeting them and wearing a mask, give them the award. So that's how I remember the date. I'd also, I suppose, just when talking about volunteering, like our service is very busy at the moment, but we're constantly on the lookout for new volunteer roles, because we have so many people coming into us at the minute who want to volunteer, but we need more volunteer roles to show them how to get involved in the community.
And so when you say volunteers, so if this charity is listening to us now and they're looking for volunteers, they should get in contact with you.
Exactly.
You have people that want to volunteer, but you have to get somewhere for them to volunteer.
Yeah, our problem isn't finding the volunteers, it's finding the volunteer roles for them to do. So, you know, I'd say a lot of people listening will be involved in a local community organisation, no matter how big or small. They can come and talk to us at volunteergalway.ie and we can help them out.
Okay, so volunteergalway.ie would be the best place for them to go to then from there. And if they want to get further details on that whole volunteering side of things, what type of commitment are you looking at?
For volunteering itself, it can vary from 2 hours a week. It could be a once-off. It just depends on the type of role. And when we talk to charities, we ask them those questions like, what type of person are you looking for? Mm-hmm. How long do you need them for? So we have all that information for anybody who comes in who wants to volunteer. So we help them decide.
I remember you used to have the Best Buddy. Is that still up and running?
Best Buddies, that's Linda on our board, does that through Ability West. As far as I know, it's still running.
Yeah, it's a lovely form of volunteering.
There's amazing volunteer roles out there where sometimes we're not sure who's getting the best out of it. Is it the volunteer or is it the person they're supporting? That, you know, sometimes people put themselves in, as a volunteer, you put yourself in a new situation, you're helping out somebody, but the feeling you get from it and a sense of satisfaction and self-worth, I suppose, and happiness, I suppose, at the end of the day that you get from it is priceless.
Is it ever quantified, by the way, the value of volunteering?
We would love to. It's a very difficult question to answer because there's so much of it going on and so much of it happens quietly. But we estimate for every volunteer that we place, I suppose, in a volunteer role, we generate about it's worth about 6 or 7 euros to the economy per hour.
Per hour.
So if you were to compare it to the average working wage.
Yeah.
So it's like for every euro funding we get, we contribute 7 euros back to the economy.
Wow.
And we don't necessarily like to think of it in terms of financial terms, but that's the world we live in, I suppose.
It is, yeah. But I mean, so what you're saying is that you can see the net benefit to the community for small investments that you get from your supporters.
Absolutely, and that's only looking at the financial side of it. You have the mental health aspect of it. People are developing their skills as volunteers. People who would normally be considered excluded from society are able to contribute more as well. So it creates a better sense of society and community, particularly in a time where maybe people feel that they're becoming more isolated from other people around them.
Yeah. So let's come back then to the volunteers. So the Galway Volunteer Centre, you're inviting the public to nominate volunteers for the National Award.
Exactly.
And quite simply, if they go to volunteer.ie, that's the only way to do it, is it?
It is, yeah. It's online. It takes about 5 or 10 minutes. It's not an onerous task. And it's an opportunity for you to, you know, write down what you think about this person, what they've done, and why you think they should get an award.
And when does the person realise that they've been shortlisted?
I think it's towards the end of November. So they will get a notification by, I think, by email or by letter or by phone.
And out of the blue.
Out of the blue. Yeah, some people will tell people, oh, I've nominated you for the award. Other people like to see what happens and see if it'll be a surprise. I know Deborah and Arthur in 2020 were very surprised when they got the national award.
And this caller said here to you, I don't know would you agree or disagree, but very quickly on this one. Sorry, I have to just load it here. I can see it on one screen, but not on the other. Volunteering should be compulsory, this caller said. For long-term unemployed and people involved in minor criminal convictions, not sending them to prison for a few months, keep them out of trouble and give them giving something back to the community.
Well, it sounds like a very straightforward idea, but I can tell you it's very, very complicated. And I suppose the main thing about volunteering is it's done by your own free will, that you're there because you want to be there and not because
you have
you've
to
been
be
told to be there or you have to be there. Otherwise, it's not volunteering.
Donnica, thank you indeed for joining us. Donnica Foley, as always, thank you for joining us from the Galway Volunteer Centre. And again, further details from volunteer.ie and the closing date on that is the 8th of October. So get nominating that person, that volunteer that you love and like. I mentioned a guy called Jim Hines there who is in the Galway Hospice Foundation. Nominate him, nominate anybody. Volunteer.ie.